Ah, you're not afraid of ghosts, huh? Well, not until you hear Joshua P. Warren. He's also going to talk about UFOs as well as his speaking of strange UFO experiences. Also, the Bermuda Triangle and how he ties all this into 2012. Joshua Warren next on Coast to Coast AM. Joshua Warren travels all over the world investigating paranormal phenomena. He has authored 10 books, has appeared on Coast to Coast quite regularly, History Channel, Discovery, Travel Channels, as well as Sci-Fi and Fine Living. He hosts Speaking of Strange, a weekend radio show on the very weird and mysterious. He's an award-winning filmmaker, founder and president of L-E-M-U-R, Lemur. Joshua Warren. Hey, Josh, how are you?
Hey, very well. Thank you, George.
Always a pleasure to talk with you, my friend.
Well, likewise. And I couldn't think of a more perfect time than right now, because even the mainstream media is becoming so paranormal now that it's hard to separate mainstream from weird anymore.
I was at a conference in Santa Maria this past weekend, and somebody in attendance during my meet and greet segment stood up and said, "I come from the hometown of Joshua Warren."
Wow, that is a great compliment. Well, I hope it was a compliment.
Of course.
How did they mean that?
No, it was very positive.
Okay.
Very positive. What have you been up to lately?
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, I have always specialized in ghostly activity, but my team, Lemur, and I have always been open to reports of all paranormal phenomena, whether defined as UFOs and ghosts or cryptids. And by the way, as a side note, let me just say, I've been so deeply saddened by this whole Bigfoot hoax because, you know, I know so many people out there who are honest people, who work hard in this very tough field, check their facts more than the average person. And I think it does a lot of damage when you see jokers like these who have pulled this hoax.
Huge damage, and I'll tell you why. One of the things that it does, when you round up media the way the media came for this one, because everyone wants this to happen, Joshua. Everyone wants to believe that this creature exists in some form or fashion. So, you know, you call a news conference, you know, you're a police officer, you add credibility. My cop friends know exactly how I feel about them. So, you know, everybody is in tune to this. But you know what? When you bring a few players in that shouldn't be, the whole thing falls apart. And I knew it. We talked about it way before even the mainstream media picked up on it, that this wasn't going to be a real one. And it was just the way it was laid out. It just didn't feel right to us. And Lauren Coleman, of course, who's a phenomenal cryptozoologist, hit it right on the head as well with his input. And sure enough, you know, look what happens.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hope that we can make an example out of these guys to prevent other people from doing this. I don't know what needs to be done here, but obviously they've crossed a lot of boundaries in a lot of ways that, I mean, you can see how they were ridiculed by some members of the press already. And next time somebody might have a real discovery and the media is going to feel like they have a permission slip now to go up and really tear into them, and it might not be a pretty picture. But nonetheless, you know, when it comes to the idea of looking at cryptids and UFOs and ghosts, what I have seen and what I continue to see is that the relationship between all these things becomes more and more prominent and clearer and closer. And that's one thing that may have held us back for so long, because people would differentiate between ghosts and UFOs and aliens and cryptids, and they would divide their efforts in the task of gathering research data so much that they were sort of facing some sort of mutual resistance. And what I'm seeing now is that we are right in the beginning of a big flap of some sort, because I am getting more and more reports of UFOs and ghosts and aliens and cryptids all coming in at the same time in the same places, clusters of things that make me think there is more to ghosts than just, you know, some aspect of the past that we're seeing, more to UFOs than just a craft visiting somewhere from somewhere else, more to these cryptids than some undiscovered normal biological organism. In fact, in a book I wrote a couple of years ago called Pet Ghosts, I talked about non-human apparitions and how that I felt many of these so-called cryptids are, in fact, some type of an interdimensional closer to a ghost.
Right.
And so when you start seeing these different phenomena reported in clusters at the same places at the same time, it makes you wonder what exactly is happening regarding that area in general and the perception of the person who is witnessing the activity. The fact that, you know, two or three people can see the same thing, and one person might say, I've seen a ghost, and somebody else says, I've seen an angel, or somebody else says, I've seen an alien or a demon or a leprechaun or whatever you want to call it. And so it's gotten so prominent lately in the news that I think that as we head toward 2012, there actually is some type of dimensional warp or change that's occurring.
I'm getting more and more emails, Joshua, from people with regards to incredible ghost apparitions that they're beginning to see, primarily from their loved ones who have died. But, you know, 5 years ago, I'd get a few. Now they just seem to come rolling in every day. That, too, is something for us to look at.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, you have these really blatant examples of these relationships in some cases. Of course, a few years ago, you remember that I was part of a team that investigated the ghosts of aliens in Roswell, New Mexico.
Yes.
And that footage has never made it to air, but still, that was one of those beautiful examples of the relationship between the ghostly and what we might think of as extraterrestrial. But now, it seems like that these connections are becoming so strong and so close and so frequent and common that some members of my team, in fact, Micah Hanks, who is an investigator, and also Mobius, they've been working on this concept of ghostly receptors. In fact, there's an article that is linked up through Coast to Coast AM, some of the things that I have provided for you guys tonight that Lex put up, that talks about the idea that there might be some part of humans that is able to somehow appreciate an unknown energy field, but it varies from human to human, from time to time. And it kind of reminds me of the fact that I've been spending a lot of time in the Caribbean because I really think there is something to the Bermuda Triangle, and I think that Puerto Rico, from which I just returned, is a big epicenter of what's happening. I keep thinking about the stories that we've probably all heard at one time or another about the fact that when the Spanish first arrived, that the natives often could not even see the ships at sea, or if they could see them, their brain did not quite process them because they were so unfamiliar. And so when it comes to this idea of not seeing something that's there or seeing something that's there, there is this whole spectrum in between of different perceptions. And it may be that in our modern language, we could say that we might be facing the same type of overwhelming visitation from another energy field or another energy force from another dimension, and that some people are perceiving this as UFOs and aliens, others as ghosts, others as cryptids. Now, of course, there are specific examples that are different, like when you mentioned someone talking about seeing a parent or a familiar figure.
They seem to always be there for them.
Yeah. And so I definitely think that what's happening right now is there is a global warping of our energy field. Because, of course, one thing is only physical to another if they resonate in an energy field similar enough to resist each other. And I think that our energy field may be changing. And I'm sure this is measurable. I'm not sure exactly how it can be measured, but I'm sure this is a measurable change. And when I've been spending time, because I've been visiting the Caribbean and the Bermuda Triangle and all these areas for years, over and over and over, and I'm seeing this acceleration, this quickening, as so many people like Art Bell and yourself have called it, that is happening. And I even saw something recently that blew my mind when I was down there in Puerto Rico. And interestingly enough, I heard you mention stories related to Puerto Rico at least twice in just the first hour of the show. So there is something that seems to be sort of condensing around that spot. But what happened to me is I was there just this month, and on the night of August the 4th, I went to a place called the Bioluminescent Bay in the south part of Vieques, which is an island to the east of the mainland down there. And I'd never heard about this until I started investigating.
Is it a developed island or not?
No. Well, there are about 4,000 people who live in Vieques, but there are no chain stores whatsoever. So everything is homegrown, and they keep that sort of very local perspective on their business there, and there are a lot of remote areas. This island has been especially famous amongst ufologists because of the amount of not only UFOs, but also USOs, which are these submerged objects that come up out of the ocean or go into the ocean, that are seen around this area. And it's also well known because the U.S. government has restricted major parts of Yakes for testing and experimentation for decades.
Oh, absolutely. They had some problems there a couple of years ago with the Navy, didn't they?
They sure did, yes. Yeah. There was a lot of testing going on down there. People were protesting, and finally many of these lands shifted from the Navy to the Department of the Interior, and then U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and so it sort of changed hands again and again, but still there are major areas there that are restricted, as there still are on the mainland of Puerto Rico, like Campamento Santiago, that some people say is the new Area 51, frankly. But right around this area, interestingly, in South Vieques, where all of these UFOs and USOs have been seen, you have this bioluminescent bay, which according to Guinness Book is the brightest one in the entire world. And a bio bay, it's an area where you have these little microorganisms called dinoflagellate that glow with this incredible light whenever they are moved or agitated. And so I was familiar with the concept, but I didn't know there was a bay like this. When the Spaniards came in to this bay back in the 1500s, they thought it was possessed by something evil. They called it the Bay of El Diablo, the Bay of the Devil. And they actually tried to dry it up by dropping off boulders at the mouth of the bay. Ironically, they failed in drying it up, but they did help to preserve the ingredients here so that this effect could become so strong. And so I went way out. I took a tour group that had about 25 people, I guess, way, way out into this very remote area. It's about 8 or 9 o'clock at night. We got on an electric boat, and we went out deep into this bay. And the water was so black and still and pristine. Everything was so dark that the stars above appeared like I'd never seen before. It was like a planetarium. I mean, every speck of light was visible. And as the boat, which was electrically powered, so it was kind of quiet, started to cross the water, I could already see this blue glow around the boat. And then you would see these fish darting off from the boat because they look like streaks of light shooting away. So once we got out there, we were able to strip down to our swimsuits, and from what I understand, only recently have people been allowed to get in the water. And we got 30 minutes to get in this water in the black, you know, like I say, 9 o'clock at night environment. And the water was about 75, 80 degrees, and even though we all knew what was going to happen, there was nothing like that experience of pushing off into this water and having your entire body surrounded by this electric neon blue illumination. And every time you would move, you would be surrounded like some sort of an ethereal creature. And I actually took a couple handfuls of this water and lifted them up in front of my face, and as they rolled down my arms in these bright blue beads of light, a trail of twinkling, sparkling lights were left behind that twinkled for about maybe 30 or 45 seconds. It was just an incredible experience. And, of course, they talk about how that the waters are healing waters and how this is a place where Ponce de Leon thought the Fountain of Youth may have existed. So anyway, at one point, I was out there with Chris McCullum, who was a member of my team who made this trip with me. We were lying on our backs, floating there. And mind you, it's so dark out here, or out there, that, you know, if I would look at Chris, he would be practically invisible. In fact, if he would dunk his head under the water and come up, all I would see were the illuminated portions of the water would roll around his face. So he was kind of like the invisible man, and partially visible, right. You know. So we're lying there on our backs. And I was saying, wow, I can see why this was really blowing the minds of the Spaniards when they came in here in the 1500s. It's blowing my mind right now. And you can hear all these people as they're getting in the water. Each one of them is going, oh, my God, because they just can't believe there's just some feeling there. Anyway, we're lying.
It wasn't really, it wasn't a physical feeling, though, was it?
Well, the physical feeling was great because it was so comfortable, but there really was a mystical sense about the whole place. And I even knew some people in the group who did claim they were healed after visiting this place. So we're lying there, and I told them, well, this is very fitting for a place where so many UFOs are reported, huh? And at that moment in time, amongst this big, clear sky above us, there was a white explosion of light. And I was looking directly at it. Chris was oriented so that he saw it more from his peripheries. But it didn't make any sound. And I, to this moment, do not know if this was a meteor or if it was something else. But I was thinking, I just told him, so, you know, I thought I could see how this would fit into the UFO scheme. And right in front of me, boom, this explosion of white light. And it was only there for, you know, a couple seconds, and then it was gone. Now, I don't know what that was, but boy, I tell you, being in that situation at that moment and seeing something like that, it just helped confirm for me that there is something really weird going on right now in terms of this UFO presence. I mean, I'm getting pictures coming in like never before. In fact, there is a reporter here in Western North Carolina who works for a newspaper called The Mountaineer, who was recently out photographing a golf course around here. And you may or may not know that Tiger Woods is opening up his first golf course here in Western North Carolina.
Well, he's even though he's not going to play it for a while.
Huh? Yeah. And so he was out there photographing a golf course, and later he found all these pictures that had flying saucers in the background. And I posted a link to those as well on the page that Lexus put up at Coast to Coast AM. And what's so weird about these flying saucer pictures I'm getting is that right outside the saucer, you will often see a small, round, metallic-looking sphere. It's like a little probe that surrounds them as well. And it's the consistency I'm seeing from picture to picture that makes me so intrigued by this. And what I find is at the same time all of these UFO pictures are coming in, I'm getting ghost pictures and ghost reports of not misty forms or orbs. I'm talking full body apparitions like I have never gotten. I mean, in fact, the last time or one of the last times I was on this show, I told you about a photograph that a friend of mine took of a what appears to be a Civil War apparition.
Yes, that was a great story.
Well, now I've got a picture you've got to see of what may be the first full-bodied apparition captured in the White House. And interestingly enough, this picture's been around for a while.
Well, you know, Joel Martin has written a book called Ghosts of the Presidency.
Yes.
Is this ghost a former president?
I don't know what it is. I think it's a workman, though. It looks more like a workman. And this was brought to my attention because a man emailed me who was familiar with my work and said that he was reading this book David McCullough wrote called Truman, which was just a bio of President Truman.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was looking at some of the photographs, and there were a series of photos taken by Abby Rowe, who was a well-known National Park Service photographer. And one of these photographs that was taken in 1950 during remodeling operations in the White House shows what appears at first to be a very typical construction scene. You've got a bulldozer there putting a load in the back of a truck. You have several men standing around. But this guy who emailed me noticed that there was a very clear, translucent figure of a man in the background. And he sent this to me after obtaining the actual print or a high-quality copy of the print from the National Archives. And what you see when you look at this is that using the other people in the picture as a reference, as a gauge, they are clear. There doesn't seem to be any sort of strange shutter or exposure activity here. And yet you have this one figure who stands out blatantly from the rest because he's translucent. And in fact, I hope that you can look at this during the next break here, and maybe we can talk about it more. If you go to joshuapwarren.com, that's my personal website, joshuapwarren.com, there is a link right there to this picture, and I really look forward to getting some thoughts on this one.
Okay, Joshua, stay with us because we're going to talk lots about ghosts, extraterrestrials, UFOs, and much more on Coast to Coast AM. Joshua, here we are. I've been trying to get into your website. I can't, so I'm going to have you explain what this picture that you were talking about to us for those of us who can't get in.
Well, I know that I should have enough bandwidth, so I guess it's just a matter of it getting bogged down right now, but because I know what this show will do to websites.
Yeah.
And having been on so many times, I have made all preparations to make sure my sites will stay up, but I hope people keep trying. But yes, if you go to joshuapwarren.com and click a link, you will find this photograph that was sent to me by a man named Bob Martin. And it's a very large, very high-quality photograph. I would say that it was probably originally taken in 1950 with either a medium or large format camera. It is black and white. And you will see some remodeling that was happening in the White House in 1950. There is a very large room. I'm not sure what room this is. You have a lot of beams. You can see the raw frame, the raw structure here, some scaffolding dispersed. In the foreground, there is an old bulldozer dropping a load of dirt in the back of a truck.
I'm in.
You got it? Okay. And there is a guy sitting there operating the bulldozer, and behind him, I would say, based upon the appearance of the scale here, maybe about 20 feet behind him next to the wall, there are three men standing there. And I have three different versions of this photograph posted where I have zoomed in closer and closer on the important part here. So you see in the background there.
Whoa.
You got it now. Yeah, okay. These three guys, you know, they're standing over to the left side, and they're wonderful because you can use them as a reference to see that they and all the other elements of the photograph look very normal. They're not translucent. They're not blurred. They're not over or underexposed. I mean, Abbey Rowe was best photographer that, you know, in his field at the time, and yet about maybe 10 to 15 feet to the left of those three men, there is another figure standing there. And obviously, this is not something where you have to use your imagination. I mean, you can look at this and instantly see this is an individual standing there, perhaps with arms crossed, looking off to the left, and this is a translucent figure.
Sure is.
So this may be the only known photograph of a full-bodied apparition in the White House. Given the stance of the figure and given the circumstances here, I doubt that this would be a president, but the way he's standing, he looks like maybe a man at attention. This could have been a guard of some sort. It may have been a worker simply because the rest of the scene is a construction scene. I don't know if that's a valid relationship, but this certainly does appear to be the remnant of something from the past, some individual.
Whereabouts around this remodeling of 1950, whereabouts was this at the White House?
At this time, I still don't know because, you know, when this picture was taken, even though now we are seeing what a special photograph it is, at the time, it was considered, you know, just kind of a mundane work-in-progress picture. I'm sure that it would be easy to go back and do more research. And I just received this photograph myself days ago. So there's a lot of work to be done, and I'm hoping that your listeners can help me with that. So I don't know specifically where this is. I think that certainly the design of the windows and stuff can help us with this. This figure is undeniable, and I see so many of these pictures where you get little misty forms and orbs and stuff that I find it interesting, but I focus a lot more now on what appear to be the full-bodied apparitions, and this is one.
This is an incredible photograph, Joshua. The close-up is fantastic, but the wide shot, you clearly can see this little image back there, and no one knows he's there.
Yeah, that's right. Nobody's acknowledging him. Nobody's looking in his direction. He seems completely out of place. And I love the fact that this is not some photograph that was taken by, you know, Joe Blow down the road. I mean, this was taken by Abbey Rowe, very highly respected National Park Service photographer. And how many people get access to a place like the White House anyway, especially in 1950, just after World War II, when I'm sure security was, you know, at a very high level. So, this is an important photo, and I feel very grateful toward Bob Martin, the man who made me aware of this, and this is a guy who had the eye to go in and look at this and find it, because as you can see in the original photo, this is a really large image, and thank goodness it's a high-quality image, so we can take even a small part and get a lot of detail from it. But if you're just looking at the image as a whole, this is not a part that the average person would notice, and the average person glancing at his photograph would probably think that was just a regular, solid, tangible workman standing there. You've got to get in close to see that he is truly translucent.
Now let's go down a little bit. Scrolling down, there's another incredible picture of a fire ghost girl.
Yeah, that's right. That was posted by Mobius. And Mobius is a member of my staff. He's also a producer on the local show that I do here in Western North Carolina. And obviously, this is another classic image. I don't know that much about this particular image, frankly. But he's always referred to this as a picture of a ghost girl on a fire escape. And, you know, if indeed this is authentic, well, then, of course, you know, you can see that it is, you know, an undeniable image in terms of, you know, seeing what's there. But get a load of this, okay? I was talking before the break about how, you know, I just got back from Puerto Rico, and I'm so in love with Puerto Rico, especially Old San Juan, that I've decided to start living there part-time to conduct research. Because, as I've said on your show before, whether it is interdimensional stuff or ghosts or UFOs or miracles and psychic activity or cryptids, I mean, all of it seems to be condensed around this little island that people have been fighting over for hundreds of years. I mean, heck, it is one point of the Bermuda Triangle, of course.
Sure.
So when I was down there earlier this month on my latest investigation, which lasted 8 days, I got a phone call out of the blue from WLOS News 13, which is our local news station here in Asheville, North Carolina, where I live. It's the local ABC affiliate. And they called me because they wanted to interview me since there was this security surveillance footage from Asheville High School.
Oh, yes. We were talking about that. That's another incredible one.
And I mean, here I am in the middle of all this crazy stuff that I've been researching in Puerto Rico, and then I get this call.
It's in your back door.
And unfortunately, I was not able to participate at that time. And, of course, I was really curious because I said, well, I'm sorry, I'm out of town, I'm getting ready to head to the rainforest. But I got back, and I had, you know, like 100 messages about this and, you know, 10 phone calls, and people all over the place were saying, what's going on? What's up with this footage of this apparitional figure at the high school? And I saw that it was posted on Coast to Coast AM. So going back and looking at that, and let me also just tell you as a side note that I got that call about 5 minutes before I met a guy in Puerto Rico who was a guide. And I told him, yeah, I just got an interesting call from my hometown news station. And he said, oh, you're from Asheville? I went to Asheville High School. I said, I can't believe this, the synchronicity. You know, so there it is again, whatever it means. But anyway, that footage, and I don't know to what extent it has been discussed on your show, but
We had video up on the website, and we talked a little bit about it. We didn't have a guest talk about it, but it was interesting indeed because you could clearly see that some kind of a figure of something was picked up by those security cameras.
Well, it made, you know, CNN and I think some of these other shows, tabloid-type shows and things, and so it's gotten a lot of attention. And I, because I've lived in Asheville my entire life, have been able to get in touch with people whose names I can't use, who are really, really close to the management of the school system and teachers and people like that who've given me the true inside scoop. Because when I first saw the video footage of this apparitional form, and aside from people who can go to Coast AM and see it, it's also posted somewhere on my discussion board, the same one that has this White House ghost apparition.
Okay.
When I saw the footage, I was initially suspicious of it because what you see, of course, is a security camera that's mounted really high and it's showing a wide view of some kind of a lobby. And I did not go to Asheville High School. I went to a school in the county, but I have been in there several times. And what you see is this form that appears to drift into the frame on the top right-hand side.
Seems to come in from outside, right?
Yeah, and it kind of moves around the frame, and then it goes back up and disappears through the top left-hand side of the frame. And it does have a slightly humanoid shape. I mean, it's not as humanoid as something like this White House photograph. But I am always suspicious of especially security surveillance camera that shows an object that comes in the top of the frame, moves around, and exits the top of the frame, because it reminds me of one of the most typical ways of faking a ghost by taking a little doll or something similar and dangling it from the end of a pole or something like that in front of a security camera and just moving it around the image and then pulling it out.
Well, that didn't look like that.
No, you know, the funny thing about this one, the thing that makes this one different, is that this figure appears to cast a shadow because it moves across a doorway.
And it's not solid.
No, it definitely has that, you know, well, it sort of kind of looks like a shadow person. You know,
exactly.
People talk about the shadow person being just a dark, sort of vague humanoid form. It looks sort of like that.
Whatever it was, it triggered that security camera.
Yeah, that's true. It apparently triggered the camera. It seemed to cast a shadow. And I thought, okay, if this is some type of a fake, then surely we will hear about this soon. Asheville's not the biggest town. If you have some high school kids who pulled off this fake, they're going to talk about it. Word's going to get around. So I've been keeping my ear very close to this, and I have not heard one person say that there has been any breath of a hoax in this situation. This is not when school was in session. And so the place was very secured. The people who were operating the security camera there were basically saying, you know, there's no way that somebody could have gotten in there to hoax this unless they triggered something else. So this also appears at this point in time to be a very plausible piece of new footage of some type of distinct apparitional form moving around Asheville High School right here in my own hometown.
What do you say to people, Joshua, when they confront you and say they don't believe in ghosts?
Well, you know, I can understand why that most people would not take this subject seriously. And similar to what your guest said the first hour, you know, we always are wary of the word belief because that implies that you need faith,
mm-hmm.
that there is no evidence. And, you know, I'm in the business of weighing evidence here. But ultimately, I can see why that most people do not take this subject seriously. The reason it's so special is because it's so rare. And, you know, if people were seeing ghosts and UFOs and cryptids every single day on a regular basis, then there would be no question, no mystery. This would be just another branch of typical mainstream scientific study. It's the fact that it is so inconsistent, and it takes people like you or people like me who are in a position where we are asking for people to come to us with their experiences. That's when you see how often it's happening, but it doesn't happen over and over and over necessarily to the same people. You've got to be a person who's seeking this because it is so inconsistent. And I think for the average person who just lives, you know, a normal life in a typical type of routine, that person might experience the paranormal directly a few times in his or her life, and then it will be easy for that person to just blow it off because Occam's razor says, hey, the likeliest explanation is the one that's the simplest, and so, you know, maybe I'm seeing things, right? On the other hand, when you spend years out there either investigating sites or interviewing people and giving them some active means of bringing these reports to you and giving you access to the activity, well, then you see that it happens all the time. It's just spread out all over the place. Science has given us a great method of solving the easiest problems first. And we've done a darn good job of solving the easiest problems first for hundreds of years with that method. But we now are at the point where we're dealing with mysteries that are so complex that we need a large database to approach them effectively. The first step of the scientific method is observation. And we don't have enough people out there observing these rare things over a long enough period of time to get the kind of database that we need. And I'll tell you another problem with the scientific method. And I am the biggest proponent of the scientific method you'll ever meet. I mean, I've written about this in numerous books.
You love technology.
I love it. I'm a geek. I love all the meters and instruments and gadgets. But here is the problem. The scientific method, because it first begins with observation, does not take into consideration a lot of political and sociological factors that restrict the observations that could be made. For example, if a flying saucer crashed, you know, 5 miles from your studio right now, the first people who would get to go to the scene would not be your best scientists. They're going to be your first responders who initially just want to keep people away, keep them out of danger, secure the scene, preserve the evidence, and they immediately become part of this pyramid of authority, this chain of command that allows other people coming in, leading up to the military if necessary, who are going to first off seal off and control that area, and then they are the ones to determine how the information is released, not the scientists. And that's the problem with us relying solely upon scientific thinking when it comes to understanding these mysteries.
Joshua, I got to tell you, the fact that this continues to happen to so many people, I can't believe that there's so many out there who doubt this, who don't believe in it.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree as well. I think that also people, they just become so comfortable with a point of view. I think religion is a good thing and a bad thing for a lot of people, because there are probably a lot of people out there who would not be such good, productive members of society if it weren't for their religion. But unfortunately, for most people, when they adopt a religion, they go ahead and make up their mind, and they draw a set of conclusions. And I bring up religion here because religion is the top framework that most people seem to use to make sense of these mysteries. When it comes to a miracle, or it comes to the idea of prayer, which is a form of telepathy, for example, they just say, well, you know, this is the work of God, and they leave it at that, and they don't explore further. And I think that there are people out there who will even, you know, persecute you for exploring. You know, I've had people throughout the years contact me and say, you're doing the work of the devil. You're trying to contact the dead. You know, the Bible says you shouldn't do that. And actually, I can debate that, because the Bible doesn't specifically say necessarily that, you know, what I'm doing is out there trying to contact the dead. What I'm doing is I'm getting out there and trying to document whether or not this type of contact is occurring. I think, you know, that's one issue we're up against here.
Don't so many of us want to believe that there is life after death?
I think everybody wants to believe that. It's a matter, however, of whether or not we want to just accept belief at face value and leave it at that, or if we want to look at it from a deeper perspective. I know we're coming up on a break here, but I can give you an example of something I've learned recently when we come back about the difference between how contact might actually be achieved versus how we expect it to be achieved.
All right, we'll do that. Joshua P. Warren, our special guest tonight, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back with him in a moment. And then the last hour, of course, share some of your stories, ask him a question or two.